everybody, this is Jake Sanzino, host of Jake Jeter Podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach of Chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gina Barbara, Gina, how's it going?
Jake,
who am I? That's right.
Slow down to speed up, Jake. Let's take it easy today. We're going to have a great conversation.
What's my name?
What's my name? Jake Stenziano. How you doing, brother?
You right. I'm always making it happen, big man. We got a very special guest today. Today's guest is a certified public accountant. Great time of year for folks to be listening in. He specializes in working with real estate investors, so we got the right audience. Also syndicators and private equity funds. He is the founder and managing partner of Hull CPA and believes that real estate investing is critical to building sustainable and generational wealth. So without further ado, Brandon Hull, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jake, Gino, thanks for having me on.
It is our pleasure. I feel like we've already had a podcast because we've been, you know, talking so much prior, but let's get into something for the folks here. We were being a little selfish. Please share with us your background and specifically why you focus on real estate investing.
Yeah, so I started my firm back in 2016. I actually started by answering a ton of Bigger Pockets questions. I actually joined Bigger Pockets because I was investing in real estate myself and I had a ton of questions. Then I saw a bunch of people were asking tax questions and I figured, hey, why not? Like, I'll try to answer these tax questions. And it sort of just snowballed from there. People started reaching out asking if I was taking on clients. So that was back in 2016. Today, I have a team of about 85 globally. We've got about 55 or so in the United States. And then we have an offshore team as well. And we only service real estate investors. So 100% of our clients are investing in real estate. We do a bunch of their businesses and stuff too. So we're not just real estate, but that's the commonality. And it's really cool because we work with people that are buying their first rental all the way up to really large companies, our largest being a $1.5 billion private equity fund. And where they're outsourced CFO and we help them with all things tax and compliance and stuff like that too. So it's been a good run, but I got into it because like I said, like I was trying to figure out how to get out of the corporate world through real estate. And then I just saw an opportunity to answer people's tax questions and went for it. So that's
and then you became the corporate world.
Yeah, I know, right? And now I have. Now I build the corporate world.
I am the overlord.
Brandon, let's go back to the 9-year-old Brandon Hull. Some kids at 9 years old, they want to become firemen. Some want to become policemen. Some want to join the military. You aspired.
I wanted to be a baseball player.
Some baseball players. You aspired to become a CPA. What was the decision making behind that 9-year-old little Brandon Hull?
I don't think I ever really wanted to be. I don't know, man.
He's like, I was shooting kids with BB guns, Gina. What are you talking about?
There is nothing exciting to a teenager or almost teenager about being an accountant. So for me, it was just I want to play video games. I went to school. My mom really pushed me hard. I owe a lot to her. She pushed me really hard in high school because I was totally fine just making B's. And she was like, absolutely not acceptable. So I ended up making like A's and B's, largely thanks to her like just grinding on me every day.
Riding that ass. <Let's go>.
Yeah. Yeah, making sure I got the homework done. But then when I went to college, I didn't know what I wanted to be, but I figured I had an interest in investing just in general, just finance. I'd read some personal finance books. And so I just figured I would double in accounting and finance and then pick one at some later point. And I ended up just doubling all the way through. But it gave me a really good education on just accounting principles and financial principles. And I got a good fundamental understanding of how that stuff works. So it was good. And in college, I crushed it. I just, for some reason, I don't know what it was. Just flipped a switch and just said, I'm going to get all A's. And I did. I got all A's all through college and worked my butt off to get it done. But yeah, that's the story. So,
What makes an accountant typically a very bad investor? Because there aren't many accountants out there that are really good investors, but they can do tax returns really well. They can analyze numbers. They may even be able to underwrite deals, but the vast majority of them are really not good investors.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm hating on CPAs out there. Please hold the hate mail.
No, you're totally right. And I'll even add a lot of accountants are not good business owners. Mm-hmm. So I could say that because I've got a big following of accounting firm owners now and they love what we're doing and I try to help them out. But accountants are not good investors, generally speaking. they're not good investors and they're not good business owners because of two things. One, they are risk averse. They don't like risk. And two, they're conflict averse. They don't like conflict, right? How much anybody listening here can probably think of an example that I'm about to share, right? Like when it happened to you, you call your accountant up, you ask them to do some work, they don't bill you. And then you get a surprise bill for the extra hour or two that happened like 8 months ago, whenever you finally get your tax returns done. Accountants don't like asking people for money. They don't like, it's just not in their nature, right? Anything that is going to create conflict, they tend to shy away from. Now, it's not all accountants, but most accountants. And I could say that confidently because we run DISC surveys for every new hire that we bring on board in our team. And if you don't know what a DISC is, there's like the D is, I think, dominance. The I is influence. The S is steadiness. And C is compliance. Most accountants are S's and C's. And if you look at the DISC wheel, like I'm over here. If you can't see me, I'm on like the southern end of the wheel.
You're
and
like
the high
4 o'clock,
driver,
5 o'clock?
High in. What's that? Yeah. Somewhere down there. So I'm down in the high driver, high influence. Like I go fast, right?
Oh, you're
I
DI.
Take risks. Yeah, I'm high D, high I.
Oh, I think you're more like 12, 1 o'clock then.
I think it's like, well, whatever. You get the point. Anyway, I'm on one side, and then we have, I kid you not, 90% of our firm is in one quadrant on the complete opposite side of me, and it's steadiness, it's compliance. So
you don't hire any D's.
What's that?
He doesn't hire any D's. He's looking for specifically some...
I have a few D's. I have a few good eyes, high eyes. But yeah, but most accountants, that's what they end up. And not to say that your DISC survey damns you by any means, but that's just the typical personality. And that's okay. You actually kind of want that, you know, to an extent as a client. You don't want necessarily somebody that like me where you call me up and like, hey, should I do this $10 million deal? And I'm like, yeah, go for it.
It looks awesome, right? Man.
Like you kind of want somebody to check you a little bit, right? Like, let's find all the ways this is a bad idea.
It's time to make a move, man. You're gonna be broke forever if you don't do this.
Right. So what you're telling me is Jake could make a terrible CPA. That's what you're telling me, right?
Right. You know, your CPAs and your attorneys, you want them to help reduce risks. You know, there's all this like social media talk about, oh, your CPA is not an investor and they should be, and they're not entrepreneurs. Don't take business advice from them. But I actually think you should take business advice from them because they're going to give you a different perspective that you probably don't have because they're that counterbalance to the personality. So that's my take on it.
For anyone looking to mitigate risk in multifamily, it's buy right, finance right, and manage right. All you accountants out there, you want to learn how to invest in real estate? Hit us up at Jake and Gino. Brandon, you seem as if you've been able to scale your business. And you just said a lot of accountants really can't scale a business. They have troubles. What have you done differently than the rest?
So most accountants, it's understanding the leverage pyramid. I think Alex Hormozi actually framed it really well. I've always known this intuitively, but when he framed it on one of his videos, I was like, oh yeah, that's what it is that I've been doing. So the leverage pyramid is basically in the world of professional services. The very lowest tier is doing client work. The next tier is managing people doing client work. The next tier is bringing in business. And then the top tier is either like developing software or content creation. So if you think about it, where are all of the accountants, especially if we're in small firms? They're managing, they're delivering service, right? Mm-hmm. It's the lowest value thing that a firm owner can do. It's very valuable. Don't get me wrong. We have to deliver great service. But should I, Brandon Hall, spend my time down in the bottom rung of the leverage pyramid delivering one-on-one service? And the answer is no, because the only leverage that I have there is over my hourly rate. But the market is not going to accept $1,000 an hour, right? So I'm capped at how much leverage I really have. Once accountants understand that, once firm owners understand that, they go, oh, okay, I need to hire people to deliver the work, and then I'll manage those people. And then it's a, well, how do I bring in the work for them to do? And then I need somebody to manage the work that I'm bringing in. And that's how you scale it up. That's exactly what I did. But it's just not intuitive with most accountants because they get to running a firm by providing good service to their clients. And so to let go of that is very challenging. But that's also why all of the clients have a terrible tax season. You know, you upload your documents in January and you don't hear from your accountant until April 15th. And he says, hey, you need to run to the post office with a $70,000 check, and it's 4 p.m., so you better get going, right? Like, those stories.
That makes people violent.
Yeah, that makes people violent.
But follow the training, right? Terrible. They were trained to be accountants, not business owners or entrepreneurs. So they're doing what they've been trained to do, and the many people fall back or attempt to rely on that without going beyond. And look, unfortunately, most of the training to become an entrepreneur or a business person is purchased in the private marketplace, right? You're not going to get it. And I'm excluding college from the private marketplace, right? Those institutions are, you know, not going to teach you how to be an entrepreneur. I'm sorry, they're just not. You're going to have to get that knowledge outside of school or bootstrap and figure it out. And that's, I think that's where the disconnect is. They're like, I wasn't trained how to do this. I can do a tax return. And then they try to bring some people along and they suffer. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one thing that I had going for me really early on was I decided from literally day one, actually before day one, before I even like took my first client, I decided I'm going to spend my day job money on a business coach. So I've had a coach forever. And I currently spend about $50,000 a year on two coaches that just sit there and tell me what I'm missing. They give me the real
feedback.
Find your
blind spots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Cause like when you are the firm owner, it's scary to give the firm owner feedback, right? So I need real feedback from people that are 10 steps ahead of me. So I pay them to tell me that. And that has been hugely impactful for me and my business. It keeps you focused on the right things and it expands your mindset. It gets you out of the, I love my clients. Don't get me wrong. But I really shouldn't be the one that delivers the service to them because they need me, even though clients will say, well, I want Brandon. But the reality is you really want Brandon to build an amazing platform that attracts the best talent in the industry to come and service you for the prices that you're willing to pay. That's really what you want. And so that's what my role is in the firm.
So to avoid that $70,000 tax hit April 15th, what are some things right now, because tax season is right around the corner, some of the things that people should be doing right now to prepare, to be discussing with their, you know, with their tax advisor right now?
Yeah, right now it's probably too late. Yes. So you're just kind of in wait mode.
Your hair's on fire right now.
Yeah. I mean, accountants are, you know, we're heads down. Although there is a tax bill going through Congress right now. So anybody in real estate, like if you're filing right now, that might be a mistake. All of our clients, we're not filing any tax returns right now. We're preparing them, but we're not going to actually press go until we have clarity on what's going to be in that congressional bill, assuming that the Senate passes it. But that might not happen till early March. So, you know, there's going to be a big wait period. But anyway, in general, my recommendation is to touch base with your accountant at least two times a year. If you have a lot of different income streams, so, you know, three properties is one thing, but if you have five properties and two businesses and a W-2 job, you should get something called a tax projection done at the end of the year. And basically it's a draft tax return that we would prepare in our software that consolidates all your income streams and shows you, hey, this is how much you're supposed to owe. Get that done before December 31st. When we do that for our clients, when it comes April 15th, the bill's negligible. It's like $1,000, or even, you know, if you're earning millions of dollars, it's $10,000. So it's not that much and it's not a big surprise. But if you haven't done those things and you're touching base with your accountant once a year, you just have to understand that your accountant's probably running a tax preparation business. They make money on volume, not on customer service, not on projecting your taxes, not on tax planning, and you're going to upload your documents in January, not hear from them until end of April or early April.
Brandon, not to hate on accountants, but
Gino, that's strike two, man. You got two in the same one here.
What are some of the things you've seen accountants do wrong? Because you're in the business, you may have even made these mistakes early on. When you're looking at a tax return, you're going, wow. Or were they not aggressive enough? Did they, you know, what are some of the things that you see accountants make mistakes on?
Oh man, we've seen all of it. We've seen states missing. So, you know, you owe California income tax or you have income sourced in California, but you didn't file.
That's just because it's so high. I mean, if you're going to exclude one, exclude California.
Is that a mistake?
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Well,
that wasn't a mistake.
California, Virginia, and New York will come after you until you cry uncle. So, No, those are the ones you definitely pay. But yeah, it's missing state returns. We've actually seen on syndicates too, that like if you're an LP investor in syndicates, we've seen capital accounts get messed up year to year, just not carry forward. And so like the ending balance from last year is not the same as the beginning balance from this year, which doesn't make any sense. So you've got to track those capital account balances, and we see accountants not calling that out. We see accountants not carrying forward suspended losses, right? So I invest in rental property or in a syndication. I get $100,000 tax loss back. I can't use it due to the passive activity loss rules. So it gets suspended and carried forward on my tax return. And then 1 year it just disappears. And it wasn't used, just gone, just poof. So we see that actually more frequently than we should. But then we just see a lot of mistakes related to Section 469. Real estate professional status, material participation. I mean, I've built an entire business on advising on Section 469. The rules are, once you learn them and kind of spend some time in them, they're really not that complicated. But accountants mess it up all the time because they just kind of take their clients' words for it. They tick boxes. It's super simple in our tax software to check a box and say you're a real estate professional. It's very simple, right? So they just hitting that and not really appreciating the complexity and how heavily litigated Section 469 is. And then we were kind of talking before too about partial asset dispositions. That's the one thing that we see basically nobody do is, you know, if I buy a property, even if I don't cost segregate it, all the components that make up the property do have value, right? Even if I don't cost seg, the roof is worth something. So if I replace the roof at some later date, I should write off the cost of the old roof that no longer exists. Otherwise, I have one roof on my property, but on my tax returns, I'm depreciating two roofs because I didn't write the roof off that no longer exists. Almost nobody does that. But those are in the 2013 tangible property regulations. And that's a huge opportunity for anybody listening to this that's investing in real estate. What we would do if you became a client of ours is we would scrub your balance sheet and look for those types of opportunities because that's money right back in your pocket pretty immediately.
That's finding some big change in the couch cushions right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, almost everybody misses it. It's wild.
Syndicators, if I'm syndicating a deal and I'm a GP, LP, what mistakes have you seen on those tax returns?
Oh my goodness. So the mistakes on those. So look, if you're syndicating, I used to think that I knew what I was talking about related to partnership taxation until I built that platform that I was talking about that attracted extremely bright people. And now I listen to them and I'm like, wow, they're light years ahead of me. So the point of sharing that is partnership taxation is extremely complex. And if you are syndicating, you're using other people's money, you need to invest in professional services with a firm that knows what they're doing related to filing partnership tax returns, large partnership tax returns. So the first thing is do your allocations, your tax allocations on your tax return, do those follow your operating agreement? A lot of times you'd be surprised they don't. So the GP will say something like, well, I want to give all my depreciation this way or that way, or I'm going to do this or that. And then the tax returns don't actually match that. Or the syndicator, the GP will say, well, I told all my investors that this was going to happen. And then you work with a professional group and you get to tax time. And we look at that operating agreement. We go, actually, one, either your operating agreement's wrong. It doesn't match what you told all your investors. Or two, you actually can't do that per the code. So now we have a problem. We have to go and amend the operating agreement to make it make sense. Mm-hmm. Those are typically the biggest mistakes that we see related to tax compliance for GPs. But the other one is just not filing state tax returns. So if you're taking out of state investors, obviously if you invest in a property in like North Carolina, you have to file a North Carolina state return, right? Because that's where the property is located. But if you're taking on investors from, say, New Jersey or New York, you also have to file out-of-state returns for those investors. The partnership does, and we see those missing a lot, and that can create a lot of pain later on because typically you get caught after the property's been liquidated. And now you owe a bunch of back taxes and penalties, and it's not like you're going to go claw it back from your investors because of your compliance error. So it's just making sure that the state nexus stuff with GPs is super, super critical to get right.
So I have a prediction here, Gino. I don't even think that Brandon sees his future yet. And maybe I'm wrong on this. But the issue here is there's two different houses. You have your syndication attorney group, and then you got your CPA group, and they're two different hands. So when, or maybe you've already done this, will you be bringing in a syndication attorney to grow the evil empire so that you can, because hear me out, that's the root cause of the issue you're describing.
Yeah.
But if the hands were communicating, left side, right side, were speaking to each other, and it started, you know, with a plan where both sides came together and followed all the way through with the syndication attorney through the CPA firm, and they knew all the steps to the framework, and they were working harmoniously together.
Yeah.
Mwah! It's a thing of beauty right there. So when does this happen for Hull CPA?
So the problem is that attorneys cannot split fees with non-attorneys. So I've already looked into it. I can't hire.
Well, there's the answer right there. So they can't split fees, but you can own the business, correct? The business.
No, accountants cannot own a portion of a law firm. A law firm could go and hire accountants to work for them. And
of
they
course. They always screw everything up. These attorneys are such scumbags. We're not going to let an accountant own us, but we can own them. You know, they always set it
so
up.
I could hire an attorney to potentially like consult, potentially.
Yeah.
But it's probably not in our future anytime soon because of the stringent rules around it. But I will say, in this regard, so most syndication attorneys that, you know, you're probably aware of on the market are good. What they will do, though, the really good ones will always say, loop your accountant into this because we have to get the tax allocations right. And your accountant should be then coming in and knowing how to go through the operating agreement. But if your accountant doesn't do this a lot, then you really need to press pause and probably go find a group that does. And like I said, like we have hired a group now that specifically does this. This is all they do all day long is they advise on operating agreements and they file large partnership tax returns. So like if you pulled me into it, I would say I'm not a good fit for this, but I've got a group that can sit right in and help you with this. That's really what you're looking for is somebody that they wake up every single day and they talk operating agreements and tax allocations. And they file big tax returns.
Before we go to the short answers, I'm going to share with you that three little word that's really bad that's going around right now. It's called the CTA, Corporate Transparency Act.
Beneficial ownership forms?
I don't know. That's like the nightmare thing that I think is unconstitutional to begin with, but you have to do it. But the rules really aren't out yet. You got to the end of the year and blah, blah. There's so much nonsense around this bill, but you have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll add there. There are still questions on whether or not accountants can do this.
Yes.
So a lot of the state bar associations this is attorneys. The state associations for attorneys, they're called state bars. They came out, a lot of them came out and basically said, if an unlicensed attorney prepares a BOI report, then that's unlicensed practice of law. And then a lot of insurance companies started telling accountants, we're not going to cover it. So our firm right now is kind of sitting in limbo, waiting for all of that to get figured out because we would love to help our clients do it. But the reality is like, we're not going to go do it if the state bar is saying it's unlicensed practice of law. And then the attorneys don't really want to do it either, which is the funny thing. It's like nobody really wants to do this.
Yes.
So it is important.
But it really is an undue burden on small business owners, and they're not cheap to do it. It takes time. And when you have 30 entities and to go back, I guess the only thing I'd say is if you're creating an entity going forward, make sure you get it done going forward with FinCEN. The ones that are behind, you know, that they're pre-2023 and beyond before that, just look at them and get them prepared. And I think it's one of those things where you're just going to have to bite the bullet. So,
yeah. Yeah. It can get pretty complex pretty fast based on the rules. So like something that you might think is simple might not actually be simple. So I would recommend if you have more than like two partners in a partnership, you might really want to get an attorney to take a look at that filing with you.
Yes. Thank you.
All right, gang. Well, let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from zero units to over 250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Wield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from zero to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey in multifamily.
All right, we are back. So what's a best practice for folks here with these cost segregations? Because everybody's, you know, doing cost seg, they think it's great, they're loving it. But do you just simply instruct your CPA to not miss this recapture, or is there a way to handle that? Because, you know, like we were talking about, that's big money there. So is it just getting with the right firm, or is there a way to, you know, verify and vet these things?
I mean, I think that any reputable firm, especially if they're like a mid-sized firm, they're going to know how to handle a cost seg, and they're going to get it reported correctly into your returns. That's the big thing, though, is to make sure that it's actually in your returns reported correctly that first year. And as long as that happens, then every year going forward, it'll still be on the balance sheet that's attached to the returns. So it'll be tracked. The challenge becomes if you switch CPAs mid hold, you got to make sure that the new CPA and their team correctly carried all the balances over. That's where we see, you know, talk about another mistake. We've also seen accumulated depreciation just get wiped out. So it just disappears, meaning that now you have no recapture because you have no accumulated depreciation, but that's not correct. And that exposes you to audit in the future. So that's the challenge. But as long as it's reported correctly on the front end, you're typically good. And as long as you're using a reputable cost segregation company, they're going to prep it for the CPA to put in your file. And then the CPA will put it into a file internally for you. So if you're using the same CPA for a long period of time, they'll always have that information for you.
Yeah, because honestly, we own hundreds of roofs. I don't know how many we replaced last year. I wish it was zero, but I know it's not. And so it's like you start to, that's the kind of stuff that keeps you up at night. It's just, you got to, you know, go back and just, it's another thing to double check on, because it's not just the roofs. There's other, you know, components there as well. You gotta look out for. So,
I mean, if that's what you're concerned about, whether or not we're claiming partial asset dispositions the way that we should, I would just recommend that if anybody is going through any sort of significant improvements or you're replacing an asset or a large component, like a roof, just ask every single year when you get the returns, hey, did we do a partial asset disposition? Just memorize that word and just ask that question every single year. And if the accountant looks at you kind of like blank stare, then you probably have your answer. They might say no, and you might say, oh, why not? Because we did some improvements. Hopefully they have a good answer there. Or they might surprise you and say, yep, we got your roof and we took the old roof off. And
that's when you say, prove it, show it to me.
Yeah,
I want to see it.
I mean, hey, look, I'm a big fan of trust but verify. Yeah. So you can trust your professionals, but it's okay to ask questions and verify that.
Yeah, you better be ready to whip it out. Right, Gino? Sure, show it. If I don't see it, I don't believe it. So you've done a great job scaling your business, right? And I think so many people may start off with, you know, a couple duplexes, but then they kind of become that solopreneur or that, you know, accountant stuck in the cubicle just doing the same job over and over again. What separated you and your firm from, you know, being able to go to a small firm to scaling? And what do you think the difference maker is that you can share with folks?
I think initially it was just my reception on Bigger Pockets was very positive and very large. So I had a ton of leads coming in and I was like, I have to do something to service all these people. So I just started.
But it wasn't going to be just you, right? So.
Yeah, it wasn't just going to be just me. I mean, I basically looked at it and was like, wow, I have a really cool opportunity here, but I need help. So I started hiring people, and then it kind of all came together in the sense of, okay, I can actually scale something. I didn't think that I would ever be as large as I am. I thought I might be like half the size over the span of 10 years or something. So I've learned more and more and more about scale and how to build the platform since, and that's accelerated our growth. But initially it was just, I just don't want to do the work myself. I want somebody else involved. Mm-hmm. And I want to try to handle more volume. And it took a long time to figure out. I mean, we went through a period where our service was not that great because we were like most CPA firms.
Says every small business that ever existed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was not that great. You can go on BiggerPockets. You can look up Brandon Hall CPA reviews or something. You could probably find a few forum posts from our ex angry clients. And I feel bad for him because now we've got we have a freaking sweet system and it's crushing. For the past 2 years, we have absolutely dominated the client service arena. But initially there, yeah, it took us a long time to figure out how to balance price, workload, and talent. And it's just, it takes time in a professional services environment to figure
biggest
that,
mistake that Gino out. And I made too, is that hiring piece. And, you know, it's the challenge because, you know, is there enough to let out and you're managing the cash flow? It's a challenge for sure. Yeah.
Well, and what's been interesting too, is as we've gotten larger, I've been able to hire better and better and better people that mm-hmm. have scaled with us over the past few years. And that those people would not have joined me as a 5-person CPA firm, right? They're accountants. They need more stability, right? I can't offer that as a 5-person CPA firm. So it's interesting because it actually gets smoother and better at scale than that yes. small firm environment. Small firm environment was brutal, very brutal. I had a lot of fun figuring it all out, but
don't necessarily tough. Look forward to going back to that anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any books that you've read in the last year that, you know, added value to your life that you want to share with the folks?
Yes. I was looking for the one behind me. I think it's called The Manager's Handbook. So I've read a bajillion business books. And now whenever I get a business book, I read about 25% of it and I put it down because it sounds like every other business book.
Well, it's because it was taken from Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they all are. They all like copy Think and Grow Rich, the copy How to Win Friends and Influence People, and then like a few other ones. But they're two of my favorite are Scale. And then that's like my all-time favorite is Scale. It's kind of like a Traction-esque book. It's a great book. But then my most recent one is The Manager's Handbook. It's literally like a how-to guide. It very tactical information, and I was like reading it like, oh my god, I'm sitting here taking notes like pages and pages and pages of notes, which I have not done in years. So I read that thing front to cover, and then I gave it to a couple people in my firm to read as well. It's very good if you're managing people. You don't have to be a business owner either. If you're just managing anybody, go pick
it's gonna
that
help
book
you
up.
Out I love
awesome.
It yeah best way for folks to get a hold of you.
You can email me, brandon.hall@hallcpallc.com. You can check out our website, www.therealestatecpa.com. Or you can hit me up on Twitter. I've been doing this Twitter thing.
X.
You hit me up on X. I've been doing this X thing where I basically post like anti-guru tax advice. So there's all this like tax advice. Like, hey,
now
go buy a
G-Wagon. He's posting things on X. And it's completely non-pornographic. It's clean. It's business pornography.
1X.
So it's 1X. Yeah, 1X. So it's The Manager's Handbook or The Manager's Guide?
I think it's The Manager's Handbook.
And if folks hit you up, are you sending them a copy of that or no? No, he is not.
Folks okay. hit me up while I send them a copy of that?
I'm messing with you, man.
Oh, I didn't write it, but sure, whatever.
All right, Gino's going to talk about when you were 9 years old and how you got there. Go ahead.
So Jake always likes when I do a recap on Brandon Hall's story. I have to say, he started out as a young whippersnapper. His mom's like, Brandon, you're not a B&C student. You got to step it up a little bit, brother. You got to do really
Stop
well.
Hanging
you
know out what? With those kids shooting BB guns, she said.
He goes to college. He's like, I figured this thing out. I mean, I'm doing pretty good here. I like it. It's either finance or accounting. And I double down in accounting, although I don't know why, because I'm a D. I'm not really an S or a C. Yeah. I want to D it. You know what? Jump on bigger pockets, start and figure things out. I want to become an investor. And I see everyone's hitting me up. I'm getting all these because everyone wants stuff free on bigger pockets. You know, they want the free stuff. Hey, Brandon, can I pick your brain on this question? Yeah. Sure, you can pick my brain for $300 an hour. Pick all you want. Oh, click. But he builds the business through that and he grinds. And 8 years later, he's got over 80 employees and he's doing something really cool. I mean, there's a service that is absolutely needed. We need more CPAs. We didn't mention how many are actually leaving the workforce because it's a really difficult job. It's an underpaid job. When you have to know 70,000 pages of tax code, it can become overwhelming. It can become daunting and it's a thankless job at times. So listen, brother, congratulations on all the success, continued success, and you don't have to whip it out. You'll be okay.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Well said, Gino. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He is the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Brandon.